Some encouraging news if you are a supporter of consumer choice and the free market being the arbiter of whether a business decision or a business model makes sense. A new study was released today, commissioned by the Consumer Choice Center, although conducted by Nanos Research, looking at the opinions that Canadians hold on a number of consumer issues, running the gamut here from Uber to Airbnb to liquor monopolies and everything in between here. To unpack the numbers here, I want to bring in David Clement, who is the North American Affairs Manager at the Consumer Choice Center. David, great to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Andrew.
So the one common thread here, if we take all of these issues and boil them down, is that people are against bans. Now, obviously, you weren't surveying government officials because that would yield a different result, perhaps. But among sort of the average Canadians that you were polling, people are against banning Uber, against banning Airbnb, against banning the transport of alcohol across provincial boundaries. Surprised by the numbers, or is this on par with what you were expecting or anticipating going into it?
You know what? I'm surprised by some of the numbers, but not surprised by some of the other figures that we saw. I would say that I'm not surprised that Ontario residents are becoming increasingly irritated with the LCBO and want more kind of private access to or access to private retail sale.
Well, that's a very timely part of it as well, because this was taking place as the strike discussion was going on, this poll, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So we wanted to ask the question, if we asked two questions actually on this. If the LCBO were to go on strike, would they support the sale of alcohol at private retail locations? And the response was overwhelmingly yes. And the follow-up response was a question in terms of their own values and what's more important to them, increased access via private sale or the continued LCBO monopoly. And the same thing. Ontario residents said that it was more important for them to have increased access via private retail. So very encouraging on that front, for sure. I think where I was surprised, though, is when it comes to cannabis. Those results were quite surprising in terms of the amount of people who don't want cannabis to be sold through the LCBO and how open people were to the idea of lounges where people can consume this. So very often people are anti indoor smoke, but when you look at consuming a product like marijuana, it's much better to have people smoking or consuming cannabis in kind of a legitimate business like a lounge rather than walking around the streets and it affecting other people. So it was great to see that people, the overall perception was very consumer friendly there.
You were asking the questions about whether Canadians support banning Uber and Airbnb in a couple of questions here. Is there a concern with that question that, you know, ban is an inherently negative word? So people are going to hear that and say, well, no, I don't support banning it. But do you leave out in the middle or do you miss in the middle people that are supportive of it on paper, but would want so many regulations on it?
Yeah, so I mean, this is just our base level of trying to get a feel for what Canadians think on these certain questions. There's certainly language at play there in terms of the use of the word ban. The reason why we use the word ban is because, in my mind, it's the most accurate depiction of what some of these city councilors and mayors have proposed. So depending on the city in question, there are cities that have either over-regulated to the point where Uber leaves or is quasi-banned, or they just straight up say no ride sharing. It's not going to happen within this jurisdiction like Mississauga attempted to do previously. So we use that word because from our perspective, that is what most accurately represents what some of these cities are doing. And what's nice is that now we can continue to have the conversation on, now we know that what Canadians want. Canadians want access to Uber and Airbnb. What are the appropriate regulations? We can now have that conversation in terms of what is and isn't appropriate, what is and isn't heavy-handed, and things like that.
Yeah, and I think that's very valid here because we're talking about having this baseline. And okay, if the majority think that this should exist, then we get to discuss what the terms and conditions are. But at least we've established that there is a place for it to consumers. And what I find interesting about this, and I know you didn't break down into, you know, what people would use or not use, but I find that there are, in what I've experienced talking to people, those who say, I don't want to use it myself, but I don't want to stop other people from. And that's something that governments need to hear as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, I can guarantee you that 60% of the population is not using ride sharing or home sharing. Which means that there is that significant population of people who are not consumers of that particular product, but they don't want to stop people like you and I from using them, which is, I mean, that's fantastic. That is supposed to be the foundation of a free society.
And that's the consumer choice thing that is really a part of your organization's name. Joining me on the line here is David Clement, North American Affairs Manager for the Consumer Choice Center, which just published today the results of a poll conducted by Nanos Research on, as the name of the organization suggests, consumer choice issues. And people don't want to ban Airbnb. They don't want to ban Uber. They also, and this is the one that I found really interesting here, the split of it, about half of Canadians say having the lowest price possible for milk for the benefit of consumers is the most important to them when we look at supply management. Now, this came up in the Conservative Party of Canada leadership race with one guy saying he wanted to get rid of supply management and 13 people saying they don't want to. But here we have half of Canadians saying that price should be the determining factor. What do you make of that, David?
You know what? It's really promising that when faced, what we did here is we appropriately displayed the issue in terms of, do we want a system that is built to protect producers, or do we want a system that is more consumer mindful? And it was great to see so many people answer that protecting producers is not their number one priority, and that in fact enabling consumers and having more access and competition is the way to go when it comes to something like a staple good like milk. So very promising results there. I mean, especially considering when on the other side, on the producer side, you have an organization with a multi-million dollar advertising budget that has its hands, well, we know it has its hands now in all three major political parties. So it's great to see consumers kind of having their voice heard on that issue. And hopefully we can continue to have that discussion, because I'd certainly love for that discussion to be something that we talk about at the federal level.
Yeah, it's been an absent one. And I know that Martha Hall Finley and the Liberals has spoken out about it for years and really been kind of in an island of one in doing that. And even in the Conservatives, Maxime Bernier was, again, very similarly on an island of one in raising this discussion. And that's perhaps one of the most dramatic examples of the status quo and the government position being so far removed from what the majority of Canadians would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, another example where you have a clear disparity between what consumers think and what the government is going to do or says it's going to do is the tobacco issue that we raise in terms of do Canadians think that banning branding on tobacco products, is that going to reduce the amount of Canadians who smoke? 60% of Canadians came out and said no, they don't actually think that that's an effective way of getting people to stop smoking. So just another example of where you have government policy not even closely matching up to kind of the wills or wants of the population at large.
Let's talk about housing here, because this is a particularly important one here in Toronto, and you decided to tackle it, which is not really as directly consumer-focused as some of your other ones in a retail setting, but still very much a commodity as far as people buying and selling and being very much impacted by it. What was the housing affordability angle that you really tried to extract from this poll?
So we were just basically looking to see if consumers view the issue from the lens of it being a supply problem. A lot of the economic analysis in terms of a city like Toronto boils down to what I like to call NIMBYism, not in my backyard syndrome, where you have counselors or municipalities implementing legislation that essentially crowds out development and puts a hard cap on things like building size and whatnot. And what that does is naturally just limits supply, which drives prices up, makes it harder for young people or middle class or kind of low-income Canadians to be able to actually afford making a housing purchase anywhere in the GTA. And so our goal was to see what Canadians thought on that. The results were about, so just slightly less than 50% disagreed with increasing supply, while the alternative was mixed between they agree that we should increase supply or they were unsure. And the unsure gap there was about 15%, which shows that there's lots of work to do in terms of educating consumers, otherwise home buyers or potential home buyers, on the benefits to looking at how we handle development in the urban space.
It does sound, and I don't want to be giving people too much credit here, but I think based on the results, it sounds like there is a fair amount of economic literacy. Even if people don't understand necessarily the economic reasons for why they want what they want, the positions that people seem to be aligning themselves with are very economically positive, if you can have, again, public policy that allows that process to unfold.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what we see here, consumers are overwhelmingly in support of a more market-friendly, consumer-friendly, private retail focused approach to a variety of these issues. And I think some of that does boil down to being economically literate. I mean, Canadians are classically people who try to be well versed in politics and kind of their information on certain subjects. So yeah, it's a very good outcome in terms of people making informed decisions.
Well, I do appreciate these numbers. They certainly give me a fair bit of encouragement that perhaps the common sense solutions will prevail here. I'm joined on the line by David Clement from the Consumer Choice Center. Results of the Canadian Opinions on Consumer Issues done by Nanos released today. David, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Really appreciate it.
All right. All the best to you, sir. We're going to be talking later on the note of economic literacy, about household debt in Canada. So this is perhaps illustrating that maybe not everyone in the country is spending as though they do understand the baseline. Welcome back to the program. This is the Andrew Lawton Show here on AM 980. You're listening to London's breaking news leader here. Just coming up on 107 this afternoon as we head into the second hour of our time together today. We talked about healthcare in the first hour, and the one takeaway from my interview with Dr. Brett Belchatz that I found most intriguing anyway is the idea that this is a service that is available. No one's forced to pay for it. No one's forced to bankroll it. But it is a service that is available to those who want it. And I can think of no more fitting segue into this discussion now. A poll that was done by Nanos Research, commissioned by the Consumer Choice Center, looking at the opinions that Canadians hold on a number of consumer issues, from whether ride-sharing services like Uber should be allowed to operate, whether home-sharing services like Airbnb, which we've talked about in a London context a fair bit recently, to whether people should be able to buy alcohol from a private liquor retailer rather than having to go to the LCBO for spirits, all of these different things. And the big takeaway, and we'll talk about some of the individual line items here, but the big takeaway is that Canadians seem to support consumer choice when it comes down to this. Wanted to welcome into the show from the Consumer Choice Center, which commissioned this, David Clement. David, it's good to have you back on the show, sir. Thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
Now, you and I have spoken in the past about, you know, things like really needlessly excessive warning labels and requirements that manufacturers and producers put all these cautions on, you know, everything under the sun. And I know that yep. actually played into these poll questions a little bit as well. But tell me what kind of the top line takeaways are from this research.
So I would say the top line takeaways from this research is that Canadians, and in the subsegment for Ontario, respondents were overwhelmingly open to increased market access, limiting government or not having a heavy-handed approach from government, whether that be Uber, Airbnb, how the government's going to treat something like plain packaging and tobacco, supply management. We saw a response in favor of a consumer-friendly approach as opposed to a producer protection model, which is what we currently have. And just across the board, we pretty much, for the most part, see instances where consumers are saying, allow for us to have private alternatives, allow for us to have access to these new services, and don't be heavy-handed in your approach in the variety of different topics that we covered.
With Uber and Airbnb in particular, which are really analogous to one another, I think. I mean, mm-hmm. Uber is to taxis what Airbnb is to conventional hotels. Both very similar findings in your poll here. Over 3 in 5 Canadians oppose or somewhat oppose banning each of the respective services here. And I think that this is a fascinating dichotomy because you have the majority of people that say, yes, we should be able to use this. But when city councils have taken up this cause, and it happened here in London, it's happened in Toronto, it's happened all over the country, it's been a lot less clear, and in many cases it's actually landed on the other side of the equation.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because obviously their constituents, who are the consumers of these services for the most part, are overwhelmingly saying, hey, quit fiddling with it, don't over-restrict it, don't ban it, we enjoy using these services, there's a reason why they're successful. The reason why they're successful is they provide a good product that people enjoy and want to use. So leave them alone. Let us use these services, enjoy them. And I think what it really boils down to is you often hear in terms of the regulatory language used by city councilors, they always talk about adding additional regulations mm-hmm. on these new ideas and new services, as opposed to taking away regulations on the services that already exist.
Yeah, that was so apparent with the taxi Uber discussion, because I said to even taxi industry representatives, you know, if you're wanting a level playing field, let's remove this restriction, remove this regulation, remove this, and all of a sudden Bingo. They only want to add rather than take away.
Exactly, and what you see is you have these industries that have what we call regulatory capture, so they've gotten into the marketplace and they're okay with these additional regulations on the industry because they know it's a significant barrier to entry for new competition. And so it's great to see so many Canadians embrace competition and so many Canadians embrace more choice ultimately when it comes to things like ride sharing and home sharing.
Let's talk about the actual phrasing here, because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that it mm-hmm. seems like I don't want to say overly simplifying, but you have to, when you're asking a yes or no question, come down yep. to sort of a simple yes or no on these situations. But when you're asking whether Canadians support or oppose banning something, yep. how do you respond to the fact that in a lot of cases, the discussions we see in councils aren't about banning these services, but rather regulating or restricting them?
Yeah, so I think what we've done here is we've established a nice baseline. We've established that the population at large wants access to these services. They enjoy them. With that, we can then move to the conversation of what the appropriate level of regulation is and talking about things of a level playing field and maybe peeling back some of these regulations that apply to the other industries in which these services compete with. Now, the one thing I will point out is that very often regulation or overregulation will end up acting as a de facto ban because the regulations sometimes proposed by city councilors are so heavy-handed that they just crowd ride-sharing or home-sharing completely out of the market. And so what this survey does, and with the use of the word ban, we've established that they want access, they want to be able to use these services. And so I think it's a good starting point.
Did you find that there were any results that really didn't make sense? You know, why would one person support this and not this? Because I find there is a really comical inconsistency in a lot of areas. Like I know someone who was a steadfast Uber opponent, just hated Uber, didn't like the company, didn't like the model, didn't like the competition, but loved yeah. Airbnb whenever she traveled. And she was pretty ignorant to sort of the inconsistency there. Did you find that in the numbers or were people pretty consistent in their support based on the spread you saw?
Yeah, I would say that people were fairly consistent. Actually, the most kind of alarming trend, in the positive sense, is that likelihood of wanting to keep the government at arm's length increased with the younger the respondent was. And so we actually see almost across the board here, the most likely to oppose, let's say, a ride-sharing ban, or you're more likely to oppose a ride-sharing ban the younger you are. We see the same thing with other other policies that were proposed in terms of things like where we can buy alcohol. Millennials, if we use that label, are more likely to support the private retail sale of alcohol than, let's say, older generations. They're more likely to support the private retail of cannabis when it's legal than other generations. So that is one trend that we saw across the board. But all in all, I would say that the results are fairly consistent in terms of the proportion of the population who doesn't necessarily want a heavy-handed approach to government regulation.
To that note of younger people being more likely to support having this level of choice, I find that really encouraging, because I know when we look at sort of political identifications, younger people are more likely to trend liberal, older people are more likely to trend conservative. And what I like here is that we're seeing a group of people that maybe demographically is not the most prone to political conservatism, but they're taking on that very sort of libertarian view of regulation and of government oversight on this. And if the way it's happening, as I'm looking at this, is how I think it is, it's actually coming about because the free market is offering things that they like. The free market is offering to them services that they want. And I wonder if that may actually drive people supporting in general the free market because they're liking the benefits of that.
Yeah, and I think from what I've seen in talking to Canadians about a variety of these issues for a long time now, is that when it comes to young Canadians, they very often are very open to pro-market arguments when they experience the benefit of it in real time. All of a sudden, when the discussions of Uber come around, you'd be very hard-pressed to find students who oppose this faster, safer, and cheaper alternative to the current system. It's the same thing with if we look at something like our question in terms of the price of milk and the government controlling the supply and price of milk. Same thing. Young millennials are looking at this and saying, no, we don't want a producer protection model. We want a market-friendly model that benefits consumers. And so it is great to see that young generation have their voice heard and really show that outside of maybe where people vote on these issues, they favor consumer choice, they favor market access, they favor limiting the role that the government can play in their consumer decisions.
I'm glad you brought up supply management, because I've long been an advocate of dismantling it. And I was quite giddy, obviously, as a lot of listeners will know, when this actually came up in the Conservative leadership race with Maxime Bernier speaking out about supply management. And ultimately, what you've done, I think, very effectively is distilled it down to the two points. Do you want a model that protects consumers or protects producers? And a lot of the times, the same people that we see standing up on, let's say, minimum wage, for example, and saying, well, no, we need to, you know, not artificially inflate wages because people need to be able to shop and be customers of this. A lot of them are sometimes the same people that are supporting a protectionist model on poultry and dairy products that again, puts the consumer's needs secondary to the industry's needs. We know, though, that industries adapt.
Absolutely. And I mean, We see that, I mean, with that policy in particular, we're talking about supply management. We see a variety of different rollout options for phasing out that form of protectionism in Australia and New Zealand. There's a lot to be learned in terms of what works and what doesn't. And I think what we've shown here is that there is a significant portion of the population who really does want a consumer-based approach to this and not a producer protection model.
Well, certainly it's encouraging for people like me that are always supporters of the free market. Good to see that even if the majority of lawmakers aren't on that team necessarily, that now we have some data which back up that the voters and the citizens are. Because I think that is encouraging if we assume that elected representatives are going to respond to the electorate's position on this and where the needle is there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just now it's the time to activate kind of that citizen engagement so that we can get politicians to listen to what the wills and wants are of consumers and regular Canadians, because what we've shown here in our survey is that there are often huge gaps between what the government will do and what consumers and citizens want. I mean, any jurisdiction that is looking to ban Uber, there's been a couple who've outright and gone ahead and completely banned it. The evidence suggests that there just isn't support for that policy. You look at something like plain packaging tobacco, which is in the process of being rolled out. 60% of Canadians responded saying, we don't think that's going to work. The supply management of milk prices and who the system should favor, same thing. Big disparity between what consumers and citizens want and what the government is going ahead to do. So,
Government needs to pay attention to it. David Clement joining me on the line from the Consumer Choice Center, which commissioned the research we just have been talking about from Nanos here. David, thanks very much for your time today. Great to speak with you.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
All right, all the best to you, sir. When we come back, I want to talk about economic literacy in a different way, and that is household debt and why you shouldn't be as concerned about it as some people tell you. That's up next on The Andrew Lawton Show on AM 980.